best country music ever made from the 70s to today for all of Northwest Wisconsin. WSCM, Baldwin, 95.7 FM.
WSCM, 95.7 FM. St. Croix Country.
Yeah, she's my lady luck, hey, I'm her wild card man. Together we're building up a real hot hand. We live out in the country, hey, she's my little queen of the south. Yeah, we're two of a kind, working on a full house. She wakes me every morning with a smile and a kiss. Her strong country loving is hard to resist. She's my easy loving woman, I'm her hard working man, no doubt. Yeah, we're two of a kind, working on a full house. Yeah, our pickup truck is her limousine, and her favorite riding dress is her faded blue jeans. She loves me tender when the going gets tough. Sometimes we find just so we can back up. Lord, I need that little woman like the crops need a rain. She's my honeycomb and I'm her sugar cane. We really fit together if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, we're two of a kind, working on a full house. This time I found a keeper, I made up my mind, Lord, the perfect combination is her heart and mine. The sky's the limit, no hill is too steep. We're playing for fun, but we're playing for keeps. So draw the curtain, honey, turn the lights down low. We'll find some country music on the radio. I'm yours and you're mine, hey, that's what it's all about. Yeah, we're two of a kind, working on a full house. Lord and Mama, we'll be two of a kind, working on a full house.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Millions of Americans go hungry each day, especially children under five, despite the efforts of hundreds of nonprofit food banks. What factors are contributing to the rapidly increasing need, and how can things be improved?
One in five kids in this country are experiencing food insecurity. So hunger can happen to anyone, but hunger is experienced by different people differently.
Then, troubling rates of depression are affecting young adults, with some high school students considering suicide.
We know that offspring of depressed parents are about 2 to 3 times more likely to develop depression themselves. Part of that is genetic, but also a lot of that is about the environment.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's InfoTrack. The show comes your way right after this.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Summer starts now with Memorial Day appliance savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances from brands like KitchenAid. And right now, you can double your savings when you spend $2,500 or more. Shop in-store or online today, because Lowe's knows home improvement. Offer valid through 6/5. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
With your choice of select sandwich, nugs, fries, and a drink, Wendy's $5 Biggie Bag is your go-to. Your nugget wingman. Your hot and crispy fry co-pilot.
Just like us. We're like the bag boys.
What?
Bag boys, bag boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when we bring your food?
For a deal you can count on, bet on Biggie and choose wisely. Choose Wendy's.
Bag boys, bag boys.
U.S. price and participation may vary. Includes choice of JVC or crispy chicken sandwich with four-piece nugs, junior fry, and small soft drink. Third-party delivery pricing may be higher.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la. It's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes, you know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
What is the current state of hunger in America? Here to answer that question is Linda Najat, the COO and president of Feeding America. Linda, welcome to the show. About how many people in the U.S. are food insecure?
You know, everyone needs nutritious food to thrive. And in every community in America, people are working really hard to provide for themselves and their families. But in 2022, we know that there were 44 million people in this country. That's one in seven who are experiencing food insecurity.
How does this impact children? Do they have a special issue with this food hunger situation?
The rate of childhood hunger is higher. One in five kids in this country are experiencing food insecurity. So we know that hunger can happen to anyone, but hunger is experienced by different people differently. For kids, the rate of hunger is higher.
How does food insecurity vary among different communities?
As I mentioned, hunger's impacts are really disparate. So for example, folks who are Black, who are Latino, who are Native American or Pacific Islander are 2 to 3 times more likely to live in a food security household than white folks. We see increased levels of food insecurity for single moms with kids. We see increased food insecurity for seniors and, as I mentioned, for children in the United States. So hunger can impact anyone, but hunger's impacts are differently among different people and communities.
I would think unemployment would also contribute to food insecurity.
You know, food insecurity is a symptom of larger problems. And we know that the root causes of hunger are many. Low-wage jobs are a driver. Systemic inequity is a driver. A difficult time accessing health care or unaffordable health care. Unpaid medical bills can drive families to need food assistance. The cost of rent and housing is soaring in many, many communities. And of course, the cost of living has increased overall, putting the price of food out of reach for far too many of our neighbors.
Our guest is Linda Najat, the COO and president of Feeding America. Linda, what are some common misconceptions about hunger in America?
I'm really glad you asked that question. I think it's really important for folks to understand that hunger doesn't exist because people have made bad choices. Hunger isn't a problem of people. The hunger problem exists because of systemic issues. There are so many of our neighbors who are working one or two or sometimes even three jobs, trying to piece together enough income to be able to cover all of their basic necessities. It's not uncommon to read stories of a neighbor whose rent has increased by 5 or 10, 15, 20% year over year, while incomes don't keep up with that kind of increase. There are a whole variety of issues that cause hunger to exist. And what we know is that to end it, we need to address both the lack of access to food for today and also the root causes that cause hunger in the first place.
What role do food banks and pantries play in addressing hunger?
Food banks are doing really, really strong work across our country, sourcing and distributing food to 60,000 food pantries and partner agencies that are the frontline support for folks who are experiencing food insecurity. And nationwide, the Feeding America Network sourced and distributed more than 5 billion meals worth of food last year. That's an extraordinary amount of food, and yet it wasn't enough. And we know that in order to truly address hunger's impacts, we not only need to supply food to folks who need it today, but we also need to be actively engaged in developing strong partnerships at the local level that help us provide access to food and housing, food and healthcare, food and job training. And we need to be engaged in public policy advocacy, working to address the root causes that cause and perpetuate hunger in the first place. So food banks in our nation are doing the work of all three of those: feeding people today, creating partnerships that can shorten the line, and working to address hunger's root causes to end it for good.
Linda, what role does government policy play in this situation in addressing hunger?
Policy is so very important. I hope that your listeners will join us as strong advocates as we lift up important legislative issues like the passage of the Farm Bill, which is currently under debate in Congress. We know, for example, that during the pandemic, there were a broad variety of support programs that actually did what they were intended. Child tax credit program, for example, was responsible for cutting child poverty in half when that program was in existence. Those programs timed out or expired post-pandemic. And as that happened, we saw the levels of hunger increase again. And so that tells us that strong and positive public policy, programs that expand access to benefits and help folks cover all of the basic necessities, are a critical way that we can work to end hunger.
For someone listening, how can an individual contribute to solving hunger in their community?
There are three ways that we'd love to ask your listeners to get involved. First, go to feedingamerica.org, and you can find information there about becoming a financial donor to Feeding America or to your local food bank. We'd love to ask for your help as an advocate, helping to advocate for positive public policy reform and legislation that can make a real and lasting difference for folks. And we'd love to have your listeners become involved as a volunteer in their local community. You can go to feedingamerica.org and find your local food bank, and from there, find ways that you can get plugged in your local community and be part of the movement to end hunger.
And again, that website is feedingamerica.org. And our guest has been Linda Najat, the COO and President of Feeding America. Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Next, alarming rates of depression among young people. That story, straight ahead.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
You give and you give. It's time to get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a Samsung Galaxy A14 included with the activation of a Silver Unlimited plan. Yeah! So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Switch to Straight Talk. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Requires in-store activation. Device offer ends 6/9/24. Taxes and fees apply.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, a Pfizer vaccine.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
A significant number of young people in America are depressed, with over 40% of high school students saying they feel sad or hopeless. What's causing this disturbing trend, and how can it be reversed? InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco has the story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Recent federal research showed the number of children ages 3 to 17 diagnosed with depression grew by 27%, and that was from 2016 to 20, before the pandemic isolated many people. Fortunately, though, there may be new help on the horizon. Joining us now to detail her study is Autumn Kajawa, Associate Professor of Psychology and Human Development and Director of the Mood, Emotion, and Development Lab at Vanderbilt University. Dr. Kajawa, your organization's study on preventing depression in youth focuses on increasing positive emotions. Is that easier or more effective than specifically trying to reduce sadness?
In terms of whether it's more effective, we're still studying that. In terms of easier, we think probably not. So there's reasons or things from the existing treatments that we have, like cognitive behavioral therapy for depression and antidepressant medications, that they tend to be more effective in reducing negative emotions like sadness than increasing positives like happiness. So we are trying to develop new approaches to specifically increase those positive emotions in children at risk for depression and see if we can do that earlier in development and if that might predict depression and might be effective for those who are low in positive emotions.
Now, your study was aimed at children of mothers with histories of depression. First off, what percentage of childhood or youth depression is genetically linked?
We tend to see 25 to 30% heritability in terms of the genetic component there. So there is an aspect of depression that's genetic, but that's not explaining all of depression. And we know a lot of it is also shaped by environmental experiences and factors. And when we think about parental depression, we know that offspring of depressed parents are about 2 to 3 times more likely to develop depression themselves. And so part of that is genetics, but also a lot of that is about the environment too, in terms of growing up in a family where a parent struggles with depression and seeing some of the emotional aspects that might go along with that.
And you did track pregnant women's emotions before and right after giving birth, so you're really drilling down there. What can that reveal?
We're always interested in moving earlier in development to see if we can get at these early emerging risk factors. And so we're now studying depression in pregnancy and depression postpartum, thinking about, in particular, how that sets this very early environment for infants. And so thinking about how we could intervene very early, starting in pregnancy, in parents who are experiencing depression, and try to treat the depression and also try to impact that family environment in ways that might promote resilience in offspring.
And the idea you're looking at is to increase what you call reward processing in children at risk for depression. What does reward processing look like?
Reward processing is how the brain is responding when there's the potential for something good to happen. So something like getting a good grade, getting a promotion, there's social rewards, getting a compliment. And so what's happening in the brain when you're experiencing that? And how do those brain responses shape behaviors to try to obtain more rewards? So we're all kind of striving for different rewards and working towards that and something that motivates us and drives our behavior. And so we measure that in the brain and look at that process as a risk factor for depression in children.
We're visiting with Dr. Autumn Kajawa, Associate Professor of Psychology and Human Development and Director of the Mood, Emotion, and Development Lab at Vanderbilt University. This concerns a study on preventing depression in kids. Can you give us some examples of techniques to increase positive emotions in children?
Yes. First, we really think it's important to think about the social contexts that impact our positive emotions. And so we're working with parents and children together and trying to increase positive emotions in those interactions, in those dynamics. Because we're social beings, a lot of our enjoyment and value and meaning in life comes from those social relationships. So we think those connections are really important. And then specific strategies we work on are things like having more positive activities. And these can be small things. They don't have to be big events like going to an amusement park, but just thinking about short games that people can play, parents and children, inexpensive things, having a snack that you enjoy together, just taking these little moments throughout the day to connect and to do more enjoyable things, both together, parents and children, and individually. And so we do a lot of brainstorming ideas around that for individuals in terms of what works best for them. So that's the kind of behavior component, what we're doing. But there's also a big component around what we're thinking about. And so shifting thoughts to noticing more of the positives that are happening throughout the day, even in situations that might seem bad, they seem stressful, there might be positive silver linings to look for. So we work on skills to try to look for those positives, attend more to those positives. And then the other aspect is really spending more time reflecting on things that have happened in the past and things that we expect to happen in the future and building up the positive emotions and enjoyment around those. So thinking about really nice time with friends and enjoying a nice dinner together and really spending time savoring that, reflecting on it and experiencing those emotions even after it passes. And for the future, thinking about things that are coming up down the road, things that you want to do, things you're planning, and building up the positives around that, and also recognizing your own ability to make those things happen.
What about infants, as we discussed before? Can parents help them develop positive emotions?
Yes, certainly. So we know that emotions are socialized by parents very early in development, in infancy, probably even some potential prenatal contributions to that. So parents are really a primary source of kind of modeling these emotional experiences. And so we have a tendency to interact with infants, to be responsive to them, to smile, to laugh. So there's often that kind of natural engagement that happens, but some parents may have more difficulty with that. And so thinking about ways that we can work with those parents even earlier in trying to increase those positives in those interactions with the infants, increase that back and forth, connecting around something interesting or fun and building up those experiences early.
I'm sure that some parents listening here are frustrated about their teens or tweens' mental health. Their kids won't talk to the parents. So what can the parents do to help them?
Preteens and teenagers often experience a lot of mood changes. There's a natural kind of fluctuations in mood that we see. And then when we think about depression, we're talking about a more severe, more kind of lasting negative mood state, and that's causing problems for the teen. And so things that parents can do, you know, really being aware of what's going on with their teens, trying to know what they're doing, how they're spending their time, looking for ways to kind of connect with them around things that they enjoy, looking for those opportunities to build those connections and to have those points to talk and to build that close relationship. It's important for parents to look for signs of depression if they're noticing major changes in their teens in terms of maybe being more irritable than usual or decreases in their grades, having more difficulty with school, or really not wanting to do things and not wanting to engage with friends or activities or things the way that they typically are, and trying to talk with them and figure out what's going on. And that's difficult, but starting to initiate those conversations. And also, if they are concerned about their teen, reaching out to a professional to get help, because we do have treatments for depression. And it's important to try to get help as soon as possible to help teens to learn skills to manage depression, to recover, and to build up more skills for the future.
And those current treatments you mentioned, like the cognitive behavioral therapy or drugs, do those effects from that last a long time?
Yes, they can. And so for cognitive behavioral therapy, that really focuses on learning these skills related to patterns of thinking, behaviors, and actions that impact emotions. And so learning those skills can really lead to lasting changes in terms of how people cope with emotions and being able to get through times of depression. And so we do know that depression often recurs, even for people who have had treatment. There's a high likelihood of developing another depressive episode, but having those skills in place can be helpful to get through it and to know kind of what to expect and to know what to do to get through that time. But it's also important to note when we're thinking about children and teens who are maybe getting treatment really early in life, that might not be enough to last all of their life, but knowing when to look out for the signs, understanding what's happening within oneself, and when maybe it might be time to get other types of treatment as well, to reach out to a professional again. And so with something like CBT, it can be helpful to kind of come back and get some refreshers on different skills, get some more practice, maybe feeling ready to then work on that on their own. But there might be multiple times of treatment throughout life.
Dr. Autumn Kajawa of Vanderbilt University, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. 120,000 miles of night drives, daily commutes, and who knows how many.
Are we there yet?
Through countless fixes, elbow grease, and a new radiator, you kept your ride alive. With eBay Motors, you have over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go. Shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
There's a shortage of housing in America, and available properties are priced too high for most buyers. Do rules that limit housing developers need to be changed? With more, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. Our guest is Brian Kaplan, professor of economics at George Mason University. He's now the author of Build Baby Build, The Science and Ethics of Housing Regulation. Professor Kaplan, we see headlines fairly often these days suggesting that Americans in their 20s and 30s essentially have given up hope of buying a home. Is that claim overstated?
Well, that's got to be overstated. There are plenty of people who do buy homes. It depends upon what part of the country you're in. But the idea that it's just hard to afford to buy a home these days is very true.
In your graphic novel, you suggest that the reason housing supplies are so low, which of course leads to high prices, is a regulatory system that treats developers like criminals. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. We've got a system where we've got the technology to go and build skyscrapers, but it's almost impossible to get permission to do that in places where you'd want to build them. For multifamily housing, it's basically the same story. 80% of residential land set aside for single family homes. Even if you just want to build a single family home, it's very standard now to have a minimum amount of land so large that you have to waste most of your land. So you have to put a house on an acre of land. It's crazy.
You see a lot of other social and cultural issues related to housing that maybe the average person may have never considered. Can you just outline a few of those?
Absolutely. Inequality. People complain a lot about rising inequality. Here's the thing. When you go and strangle the housing industry to make housing a lot more expensive, it makes it more expensive for everybody, but poor people spend more of their income on housing. And so you are disproportionately harming poor people when you make housing more expensive. Social mobility. Used to be there was a really easy way for someone to get a better life for themselves than in the United States, which is just move to a high-wage part of the country. Now, however, that doesn't generally work because usually if you move to a high-wage part of the country, the extra housing cost will burn up more than 100% of your wage gains. There's just not much point in moving. Other problems, fertility. One of the main reasons people keep living with their parents is because housing costs so much. And as long as you're living with your parents, you're probably not going to get married and even less likely to have any kids. So yeah, if we could go and make housing cheaper, this is going to be a boon to family formation. This is one where there are at least several papers going over it, and it does seem like the story is actually true.
Would this loosening of restrictions be state by state or on a federal level? And just what would you envision would happen at that point?
Yeah, honestly, I'll take whatever I can get. The deregulation that's happened in the U.S. so far is usually state governments going and telling local governments that they can't do such strict single-family zoning anymore, which is fine as far as it goes. There's plenty of things that can be done at all levels. At the federal level, there are some very strict and unreasonable environmental review requirements for doing a lot of developments. There's actually quite a bit of federal encouragement of community activists who almost always just want to stop housing, honestly. So you don't become a community activist to go and allow people to go and build stuff. You become an activist to go and cause problems and complain. And honestly, a big theme of this book is that complainers have way too much power. And yeah, sure, anytime you build something, you can come up with some reasons why it's a bad thing. You build a skyscraper, it blocks my light. But I just say it was just better when we didn't pay much attention to complainers and said tough luck. And what we get is much cheaper housing, some of which you or your kids are likely to be able to live in.
We started this interview talking about people in their 20s and 30s and their possibilities for home ownership. Do you have any words of encouragement for them?
I guess I would say that the really good news about the United States is that because the policy is set at the state and local level, you can actually escape areas with terrible regulation and go to places that are more reasonable. So, Texas has expanded in population tremendously because it's got much less housing regulation, which means much lower prices than most of the rest of the country. There's just a lot of people that have moved there, millions, because they can afford to get a nice house without having a really high paid job. If you go to Texas, I spent a lot of time there during COVID. People there feel like their housing is expensive, but it's like, all right, you for like $300,000 to live 30 minutes outside of one of the biggest cities in your state, and it costs you $300,000. That sounds really good to a lot of people in the U.S. anyway. So it's one where it's not like they've deregulated. Instead, it's just like they've never had that much regulation and they're sort of sticking with it. Although even there in some cities like Austin, they have some pretty bad policies.
Brian Kaplan, professor of economics at George Mason University and now the author of Build Baby Build. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Thanks to this week's contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Baby, don't say no so quick. This ain't about me trying to see how far that I can get. But I ain't gonna lie, I wouldn't mind just a little bit of you and I. Eye to eye, lips on lips, swaying to the music real close. We can both use a little let go kind of night. Baby, if you want a good time, we can get on it. Just take a shot and you can step on it. We'll find a floor, we can dance on it. Slow song it. Just now seen that smile, and I bet it's been a minute since you tapped on into your wild and crazy side. So baby, let's do this tonight. Baby, that moon looks just right, but don't fight it. If you want a good time, we can get on it. Take a shot and you can step on it. We'll find a floor, we can dance on it. Slow song it. As far as I can tell, that thing ain't got no rain on it. So come on, baby, get you feeling all right tonight. Sounds good, don't it, don't it? Every little thing got to know that I want it.
said I was in my early 40s with a lot of life before me when a moment came that stopped me on a dime. I spent most of the next days looking at the x-rays, talking about the options and talking about sweet time. I asked him when it sank in that this might really be the real end. How's it hit you when you get that kind of news? Man, what'd you do? And he said, I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Blue Manchu, and I looked deeper and I spoke sweeter and I gave forgiveness I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like we're dying. He said I was finally the husband that most of the time I wasn't, and I became a friend would like to have. And all of a sudden going fishing wasn't such an imposition, and I went three times that year I lost my dad. Well, I finally read the good book and I took a good long hard look at what I'd do if I could do it all again. And then I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu, and I looked deeper and I spoke sweeter and I gave forgiveness I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying. Like tomorrow was a gift and you got eternity. Think about what you do with it. What did you do with it? What did I do with it? What would I do with it? Skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu, and I loved deeper.
Make sense. I stumbled to the kitchen. She was standing at the sink. I
complicated world. It may sound absurd, but simple little things are the miracle cure. Push to the limit or standing at the brink, all she's gotta do is just to give me that way. And slam bam, I'm feeling alright. Troubles take a hike in the blink of an eye. No need to psychoanalyze or have a stiff drink, all she's gotta do is just to give me that way. And slam bam, I'm feeling alright. Troubles take a hike in the blink of an eye. No need to psychoanalyze or have a stiff drink, all she's gotta do is just to give me that way. All she's gotta do is just to give me that way.
95.7 St. Croix Country, Baldwin's home for country favorites.
The other for the woman who loved it.
Legends on St. Croix Country, 95.7 FM.
So good. How do we stay so long together when everybody said we never would? And just when I start to think they're right, the love has died. There you go, making my heart beat again, heart beat again, heart beat again. There you go, making me feel like a kid. Won't you do it and do it one time? There you go, pulling me right back in, right back in, right back in. And I know I'm never letting this go. I'm stuck on you. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, stuck like glue. You and me, baby, we're stuck like glue. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, stuck like glue. You and me, baby, we're stuck like glue. Won't you do it and do it one time? There you go, pulling me right back in, right back in, right back in. And I know I'm never letting this go. I'm stuck on you. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, stuck like glue. You and me, baby, we're stuck like glue. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, stuck like glue. You and me, baby, we're stuck like glue. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, you almost fell out. Too stuck together from the ATL. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, feeling kinda sick. Just a spoonful of sugar, make it better real quick. I say, whoa-oh, whoa-oh, what you gonna do with that? Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, come on over here with that sugar, sticky, sweet stuff. Come on, give me that stuff. Everybody wants some melodies or get stuck up in your head. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, up in your head. Whoa-oh, whoa-oh, up in your head. Whoa-oh,
Blue.
Stream it 24/7 on your smartphone with the free Civic Media app. Northwestern Wisconsin Country is 95.7 St. Croix Country.
Like you, that's where we run to.
They got Whiskey River on the jukebox, a honky tonk sawdust dance floor, a neon 5 o'clock road clock, and plenty damn many when you want more. This broke heart fool on an old bar stool, drinking beer almost as cold as you. A bunch of good time numbers on the stall door, a picture of you on the dartboard. Them cinder block walls ain't ever been clean, still ain't as dirty as you done me. Whiskey River on the jukebox, a honky tonk sawdust dance floor, a neon 5 o'clock road clock, and plenty damn many when you want one more. This broke heart fool on an old bar stool, drinking beer almost as cold as you. When guys like me lose girls like you, that's where we run to. We got Whiskey River on the jukebox, a honky tonk sawdust dance floor, a neon 5 o'clock road clock, and plenty damn many when you want one more. This broke heart fool on an old bar stool, drinking beer almost as cold as you. Cold as you.
Against you, girl, get back in bed.
I feel lucky. I feel lucky, yeah.
No Professor Doom gonna stand in my way. I feel lucky today. To the clerk, the pot's 11 million, so I called in sick to work. I bought a pack of Camels, a burrito, and a Parks. Crossed against the light, made a beeline for the park. The sky began to thunder, wind began to moan. I heard a voice above me saying, girl, you better get back home. But I feel lucky. Oh, 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 I feel lucky. I feel lucky today. Now 11 million later, I was sitting at the bar. I bought the house a double and the waitress a new car. Dwight Yoakam's in the corner trying to catch my eye. Lyle Love is right beside me with his hand upon my thigh. Moral of the story is simple but it's true. Hey, the stars might lie, but the numbers never do. I feel lucky. Oh, 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 I feel lucky, yeah. Hey, Dwight. Hey, Lyle. Boys, you don't have to fight. Hot dog, I feel lucky tonight. Yeah. feel lucky today.
Best country music ever made from the 70s to today for all of Northwest Wisconsin.